This podcast is offered to you by Zen Center North Shore on the web at www.zencenternorthshore.org. This program is made possible by donations from listeners like you.
Good morning. Hi, everybody. Happy summer. Thank you, Julia, for that little wave. Thank you, Wendy. Okay, look what I have in my hand. I'm going to assume, and I don't always do this. I mean, I assume a lot, but I don't assume about this particular thing. I'm going to assume that everybody here this morning wants Zen training. I'm going to assume that. I'm feeling playful, so don't get nervous. Because I know last week, many of you heard me say that I was in a very bad mood. I phrased it a little bit more colorfully, but basically it was difficult. And the backdrop of this is, you know, of course, the various decisions from our Supreme Court in the last week. So this is not just, you know, my personal issue. Of course, this is how I'm responding to something greater than me. But I do want to talk about this a little bit this morning. You know, from the ground of practice, from the ground of Zen training. So the invitation of chanting is to experience the communal. And the way we do this is through the forms and the ceremonies, the particular practices. And it is so wonderful how this practice of Zazen and everything that supports the practice of Zazen, which of course is a practice of the absolute truth, prajna. And we use our body minds, which when interacting with this absolute truth, fall right into the messy conventional truth of delusion, pain in the body, incessant mental chatter. So it's the body that is the opening into realization, into freedom, into the truth of connection without bypassing anything. We feel it all. So in our chanting practice, the deliverance comes from dropping out of our individual stuckness into a communal flow of freedom. This is what the Ehe Koso sounds like when chanting.
We bow with all beings from this life on throughout countless lives to hear the bear upon hearing it, no doubt will arise in us, nor will we lack in faith that upon we shall renounce worldly affairs.
Okay, so the trick for this, well, the opportunity of this is you are not relying on when I, Joan, need to take a breath. You're not relying on my particular need. Because if that starts to happen, we fall back into the individual. So the communal, the container for the communal is this regularity of chanting. So I would like for the Dolan Ryo to practice this more, because otherwise, thank you, Seitetsu. And this is for all of us too, all of us, because we're all chanting. And you may notice what arises in your own body mind when it becomes more like sentences with punctuation, where it becomes more particular. So now, what I love about our Sangha, which many things I love about our Sangha, but we don't sound like Zen robots. We are with all beings. We don't need to go there. So the trick here, the challenge, is to find that regularity without, you know, becoming robotic about it. So this is, as usual, just an opportunity for, like, it's a kind of giving over, a kind of dropping the clinging, whether it be to my individual inflection and intonation, or my preference for, oh, I mean, I've heard that, and you've maybe heard that, and maybe that's why chanting is somewhat off-putting to Americans, Zen chanting, but the Japanese are onto something. They're all about group practice. And so as an expression of group practice, I just want to share with you the other thing that I'm feeling this morning is the beauty and the joy of yesterday's group practice. Okay, we had on our schedule a hike to the Kwabin, and it was determined by the person leading the hike that it was too hot to hike the Kwabin. So we've rescheduled that for October. So we check out the website and see when it's been scheduled, and maybe the staff can look at that and make sure that that works for everybody, you know, at a cooler time. And so we decided to just still come together as a Sangha for those who could. And I feel like as I talk about this, I know some people didn't even know about this yesterday, but if you had signed up to hike the Kwabin, you would have known about this. And if you wanted to do what we did instead, but didn't know about it because you didn't sign up for the Kwabin, I'd like to ask maybe the staff here, or maybe all of you here, I don't know who, if we could have a little bit of a buddy system when we pivot like we did yesterday and decided to still use that time that we had set aside for Sangha, even though it was a different expression, it sort of made the website. I think it did make the website, but the details didn't arrive. So it's going to be on you to follow up. But maybe some of you could adopt a Sangha mate if you're more on that text chain or that email chain to just help spread the word, to look out for each other. Because what ended up happening yesterday was this expression of giving over to the communal, showing up and making offerings, you know, outside of our own particular preference. And it was, I mean, for me anyway, this is my idea of a good time. What it was we showed up in the Welcome Garden and there weren't many people there yet. So we looked around, the few of us who were there at 9:30, and determined, okay, let's go to this kind of Sangha member's house who is moving. She's in the midst of a big move and she has difficulty letting go of things. And so it turned into kind of a chaplaincy situation where we went over thinking that there could be some things for the Welcome Garden. Very few of the ones that we loaded actually stayed in the Welcome Garden. But the beauty was that we were together, right? And we helped and we moved the energy, we moved stuff. We saw the relief and the gratitude on the faces of this couple who are really in it, like trying to move out of this house and get it ready to sell. And then we returned to the garden and there was just such a flurry of goodness. And if you weren't able to be there, it's totally fine if it didn't work out. I just want to share that this giving over to the communal is not just, that's training. That's just training for appreciating giving over to something bigger than the individual. You know, it's just one way of accessing this. It's the way I know. And by the way, also, I was thinking about the nine bows this morning and the chanting too. I've been talking about this week. about how these practices are an important checkpoint for Zazen. That Zazen could easily become an experience and activity from the neck up, meaning, and back here, or up the brain, mental activity. It could be, you know, Zazen, the silent meditation, the silent sitting could easily become just mental activity, or could easily become just simply psychologized. And or intellectual. So when we bow and we chant, we're involving the body. It's like, oh yeah, the body for some of us. On a simple kind of physiological, physical level, for those of us who are already sitting in the body, still it makes sense to have a diversity of experience after you've been sitting in stillness to get up and move. For me, it feels really good to bow, to give over to that, to use my voice, to not stay in the realm of conceptualized silence and stillness. It's not that movement and sound are bad. We're not rejecting them. We're just finding another way to relate with them. So this morning, you know, as I'm thinking about the week and I'm thinking about, you know, what's happening in our country and how do we respond as bodhisattvas? How do we respond as people of faith, of not giving up on the world? And not getting, you know, overwhelmed by it either. So I want to share with you, there's a very important piece that came out yesterday in the Boston Globe by the journalist, I think you pronounce it Janae Osterhelt. She's one of an amazing group of Black journalists that write for the Globe. And I follow them very closely because I connect with their wisdom and their lived experience. And I really appreciate their point of view. It makes total sense to me. And get this, what Janae said yesterday, she's writing about the Supreme Court decisions. She says, and I quote, "Liberation is a practice." And I've added to that over the last few years, democracy is a practice. Racial justice, social justice, justice is a practice. None of this is guaranteed. It requires our ongoing engagement. So, and interestingly, I had a hard time finding the article this morning because she's so, I mean, I don't know if this is why, but she's so, one of the things she says is, we're ready to rumble. So it's a little bit, it's quite strong. And today it's difficult to find in the Globe. I don't know if they backtracked at all. But here are some of the things she says that appear in it. She's saying, there is no finish line marked free in this country of ours, in this, you know, political, you know, this aspirational democracy of ours. There's no finish line. It's still aspirational. She's talking about, of course, how the court overturned Roe versus Wade, how in the Supreme Court, at least some of the justices in their determination called it a mistake. And there's a door that's open to call other judgments a mistake, like potentially interracial marriage, same-sex marriage. So this is a very dangerous point. Whether or not you are pro-choice, this is a very dangerous moment in our country's, I hate to say evolution, because right now it feels like the opposite of evolving. She says, this is a public health emergency, birth control, reproductive health, especially for marginalized people. All of these things are really at risk right now. She's saying it should not be easier for a president to incite insurrection and co-sign the hanging of his vice president than it is for a woman to control her own body. She's pointing to the hypocrisy of refusing to arrest a corrupt president, even as we hear evidence against him, how a teenager can buy a machine gun, but a woman is restricted from her own reproductive autonomy. She's framing it, you know, abortion was a civil right guaranteed by our Constitution that's now been rescinded. And that we're in a violent conflict right now between those who understand freedom as something to cultivate and protect and those who are obsessed with power and control. So I will say to you that I felt, you know, right now I feel like I could just burst into tears. This is so deeply painful, deeply disappointing, terrifying, outrageous. I feel exhausted. I feel despair. I feel anger. Outrage, disbelief. You know, and I actually do feel a measure of a sense of powerlessness. I'm going to admit that. But I don't believe any of that. I am sharing that with you because that's here too. Our practice is not to try to make ourselves feel better. It's not that we're going to be safe from any of this. This stuff is real. And people of color will help me and maybe you, if you identify as white, to stay in the reality. So in a situation like this, in a week like this, I want to say is, what do I do? I want to share with you what I do. Like, where do I go? I go to the Triple Treasure. I go to Buddha Dharma Sangha. Yesterday, someone shared who was there yesterday, how wonderful it was to just be together, to be with Sangha, to be with a group of clearly kind, compassionate bodhisattvas, you know, wanting to be of help and finding joy there and thinking that that's a good time. Oh yeah, by the way, what was important about yesterday is after all this work, you know, working in the garden and moving all this stuff, you know, it was a lot of work and we were dusty and we were hot. We got this really nice lunch and we ate it together on the beach. And we went swimming. And that's really important. All of this is intentional. I knew it was going to be hard work yesterday morning. I knew it was going to be hot. I knew it was going to feel good to swim. I didn't know exactly what was going to happen, who was going to be there, but I knew what I was up for and what I felt I wanted to invite the Sangha to participate in. I want you to know this is the practice of this Sangha. This is the practice of a bodhisattva, of valuing joy, valuing pleasure, valuing rest. It was important to just lie on the beach, you know, in the midst of everything that's happening, not just politically, but our friends moving across the country, you know, of just whatever we're feeling in our own lives, to come together, not to fixate on these things, to try to solve them, but to stay with, just to simply stay with. So specifically, I felt yesterday was, for me, yesterday was Buddha Dharma Sangha, but maybe more what more was felt by those of you who were there. Maybe it sounds to you more like that was Sangha. And so we could say that. So this morning, more explicitly for the next few minutes, I wanted to share a little Buddha Dharma. Traditional, classical Buddha Dharma. Having given you this backdrop of at least what I'm feeling, what I'm thinking about, what I feel is helpful. It's kind of wild. Shinjin Gakudo, I find very helpful this morning. It's Dogen's teaching, his essay on body and mind study of the way. And I'm just going to pull out just a few little fragments because in a few minutes we'll pair up. And I think it'll be really important for you to share just whatever is in your heart this morning. It may be something from these teachings. It may be something from what I've said, something that Dogen says. It may be just simply how you're feeling about the state of things in the country. I think it's really important for us to talk about this with intention and awareness. And the mind, heart of practice, bodhisattvic practice, which is finding a way to be in this world fully without rejecting anything. Without rejecting anything, to be fully in this world as it is, with a mind, a body mind, that's not giving up on the truth of connection, which means love and respect. Okay, here's Dogen. These are just a few things. Body and mind study of the way. The Buddha way cannot be attained unless you practice. It's what Janae Osterholt just told us. And without study, it remains remote. Zen master Dahui of Nanyue said, "It is not that there is no practice and no realization. It is just that they cannot be defiled." Not to study the Buddha way is to fall into the realm of shameless and erroneous ways. All preceding and succeeding Buddhas always practice the Buddha way. And we just chanted in the Ehe Koso that Buddhas and ancestors of old were as we. So when Dogen's talking about Buddhas, he's not talking about you. Okay. Shaving the head and wearing the robe is itself turning the mind and illuminating the mind. Leaving the castle and entering the mountains is leaving one mind and entering one mind. To directly enter the mountains is to think not thinking. To leave the world behind is non-thinking. What I was non-thinking during service this morning is how we were literally deeply entering the ocean yesterday. We chant that all the time. And to be able to do that, to use the natural world, to make use of the natural world, to harmonize with the natural world, to be healed by the natural world. There's no coincidence that we say, taking refuge in Dharma is entering deeply the merciful ocean of Buddha's way. Now, mountains, rivers, earth, the sun, the moon, and stars are mind. At just this moment, what is it that appears directly in front of you? When we say mountains, rivers, and earth, we do not merely mean the mountains, rivers, and earth where you are standing. There are various kinds of mountains, such as Great Sumeru and Small Sumeru. Some mountains extend widely. Some rise up steeply. A billion worlds and innumerable lands can be found in a mountain. There are mountains suspended in form. There are mountains suspended in emptiness. Earth is not necessarily ground, and ground is not necessarily earth. There is earth ground, there is mind ground, there is treasure ground. Although the varieties are innumerable, it is not that there is no earth, but invariably there is a world where emptiness is earth. Just a little bit more. The sun, moon, and stars are seen by humans and by devas are not the same, and the views of various beings differ widely. Views about one mind differ as well. Yet these views are nothing but mind. Is it inside or outside? Does it come or go? Is there more of it at birth or not? Is there less of it at death or not? How do we understand this birth and death and views of birth and death, this coming and going, this fact of impermanence, this arising and subsiding of empires and aspiring democracies? All this is merely a moment or two of mind. A moment or two of mind is a moment of mountains, rivers, and earth, or two moments of mountains, rivers, and earth. Because mountains, rivers, earth, and so forth neither exist nor do not exist, they are not large or small, not attainable or unattainable, not knowable or unknowable, not penetrable or impenetrable. They neither change with realization nor change without realization. Just wholeheartedly accept and trust that to study the way with mind is this mountains, rivers, and earth mind itself, thoroughly engaged in studying the way. So Dogen here, or at least Kaz is translating it, has mountains, rivers, and earth hyphenated, just like practice realization is hyphenated. It's not two. Just wholeheartedly accept and trust that to study the way with mind is this mountains, rivers, and earth mind itself thoroughly engaged in studying the way. And then just one last thing. Dogen says, in this manner, the mind studies the way running barefoot. Who can get a glimpse of it? The mind studies the way turning somersaults. All things tumble over with it. All things rumble with it. And with Janae. At this time, a wall crumbling away allows you to study the 10 directions, and the gateless gate allows you to study the four quarters. It's a beautiful image on this day of mourning, grief, despair, you know, all that we might be feeling because of what is happening in the conventional human realm in our country right now. We can also have this image of the mind that studies the Buddha way running barefoot and turning somersaults amidst the mountains. Maybe I'm going to a pool today. Maybe I'll do a little somersault in the pool with Wangari's daughters. So the spirit of this, I feel, you know, is what is going to encourage us, enable us, allow us to not give up moment to moment forever, no matter what happens. And neither in this not giving up to fall into some pious state of, you know, another kind of, you know, problem that we create. How can we, you know, as Patanjali said, how can we use joy as a bodhisattva weapon, you know, of like Manjushri's weapon, which is a non-weapon, you know, but it is maybe like a garden tool. Know, to create beauty and to create, oh, just a place of stunning connection. So when I was the head of the cabin crew otherwise known as housekeeping, at Tassajara. It was like my third practice period there, my third summer there. The way I trained people who were cleaning the cabins, because it's like cleaning the toilets and, you know, sweeping, and it's hot and, you know, it's kind of hard work. I would say to them, please, the last thing for you to do is, once you finish cleaning the cabin, as you're leaving, turn around in the entryway and look around at what you've just done. See the altar you've just cheatened. Remember, cheatening the altar, creating beauty, tranquility, creating serenity, you know, this calm, beautiful place was what it was like to clean a cabin. And when you turn around and you take all this in at what you've created, enjoy it. And so that's what we did as we were leaving the garden yesterday. We turned around and it was so beautiful and so peaceful. And Esther, I let Esther know all that we'd left on the sidewalk for those who were there. People were like, is this okay? Yes, the city of Beverly still, when the trash come, trash pickup, they'll pick up everything, kind of unfortunately. You know, so there's quite a bit on the sidewalk right now, but so I wanted to warn Esther about that. This is kind of Esther's land. And she said that she wasn't able to join us, but last night she went down into the garden and just could feel it. She thought it looked beautiful. So I hope for those of you who haven't come to the garden yet, I hope you'll have a chance this summer. We sit Zazen there on Wednesday and Friday evenings from 6:30 to 7. And if you're coming from farther away, there is a garden soiree happening on Saturday evening, July 30th from 6 to 9. And it would be wonderful to be in the garden with you sometime this summer. Okay, so, you know, I do think there is freedom, true freedom, and allowing everything to be in coexistence within me and without, outside of me. All of this is happening. So I would like to say, please take to the streets. Join in with the people who are taking to the streets. Be loud and proud, you know, to speak right now, if you feel inclined to do that, to write to your elected officials, to encourage, you know, sanity here, you know, to not return to some dark place, to support organizations, you know, who are supporting reproductive health, if not abortion outright, the right to an abortion. Make sure you vote. Make sure you identify candidates who are in alignment with your particular values. This is definitely the time to engage. And most of all, please continue to study the way thoroughly with your own body and mind and find out what does that mean for you. Okay.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. This podcast is made possible by donations from listeners like you. For more information or to donate, please go to www.zencenternorthshore.org. Thank you.